Welcome to the Voices of Marketing Podcast. And now your host, John Shea.
Hey guys, welcome to the show. Today on the show, I have Jeff Brown. Jeff is actually another podcast host. He hosts a podcast called the Read to Lead Podcast. And Jeff's here to talk about his background, his story, also talk about podcasting. So welcome to the show, Jeff.
Well, thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be here. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem. So you kind of want to share your story. You know, I know obviously you're doing a podcast now. Mm-hmm. And like we mentioned, you know, you've got quite a bit of a background, I heard, in radio. So what's kind of brought you into this podcasting world and where did you kind of start out?
And we'll try not to hold that against me if if you can avoid it.
Yeah.
26 years total. Not all of that full time, but you know, like any radio person, you know, I paid my dues for a few years before launching into it full time. But that all began back in, I'm going to date myself here, 1987, when I was 21 years old. So I didn't go to school for radio or anything like that. I'd been a music ed major in college and dropped out and was kind of searching for what I was going to do with the rest of my life. I'd had an interest in radio since I was a kid, and I just sort of fell into some local radio trade school that had just opened up. I was the first student to ever enroll. 6 months later, wow. I was the first student to graduate. It was sort of a crash course in radio taught by a former radio guy. And there was some job placement assistance along with that. And a month after graduating, this is July 1987, I was working my first radio job and have been doing radio in one form or another up until June of last year. That whole time. So I did most of that in Indianapolis up until, 1996. And then wow. That's when I moved to Nashville actually to work in the music business or the music industry in radio promotions, calling upon radio stations to track singles and things of that nature, get them to play our artists' music, basically. And did that for 4 years while continuing radio part-time. And then after 4 years and four labels later, I decided it was time to get back into radio. And that was about 1999 or 2000. Got back into radio at a station here in Nashville and worked there for 13 or 14 years. First year part-time and then 13 years full-time. And that was, like I said, up until June of last year, June 17th, me and two of my colleagues were let go on the same day, part of a company restructuring or reorganization. The guy that hired me all those years ago had left in late 2012.
Right.
And they went through this sort of 6 month or so period of kind of in limbo of trying to figure out, I say they, I mean the powers that be, the corporate executives, as to what they were going to do. And eventually they decided it was a great opportunity to release the three staff members who had been there the longest and were therefore paid the most. And so, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say that's just, it seems very typical of that, the corporate. You
know. Oh yeah, very much so. And I mean, I don't hold that against them. That's the decision they needed to make going forward. And the funny thing is, through all this, is from about a year ago, a little less than a year ago, maybe late winter, early spring, I had begun having conversations with my wife, you know, coming home from work and saying things like, hey, I want to quit my job. And that's kind of how I presented it the first time. And she was like, whoa, wait a second. You know, she had known me since 2000 and I had never had any other job. You know, she had not known me to have anything else, you know, job wise. So
right.
That kind of sort of threw her for a loop a little bit. And we talked about it, and I had some ideas as to what I might do. And I really wasn't 100% confident with where radio as an industry is going anyway. And so that's where some of this was stemming from. And so we talked initially about me leaving maybe in the fall sometime. And then in the back of my mind, that seemed too soon. I was a little worried or scared about just walking away from a great job. And so I sort of settled upon December 31st is when I would leave. And I think looking back on it, part of that was because that allowed me to put it off even further because I think I knew deep down in my gut that I wouldn't actually pull the trigger when the time came.
Right.
And I even sat down with a friend of mine as recently as May of last year and said, you know, probably the best thing that could happen to me would be to be let go, be handed a severance package, and forced out of the nest. That's really ultimately how this thing's going to happen, I think, because if I choose to leave, I'll always be second guessing whether or not I made the right decision. Well, a month after he and I had that conversation, a month after my wife and I had a similar conversation, that's exactly what happened. I got let go, got handed a 10-week severance package. Not great, but it was decent.
Yeah.
And I've been on my own ever since. I haven't looked back, and I have not looked for a job and don't intend to.
Wow. So, I mean, you really, from that point on, was that when you came up with the idea to start the podcast?
You know, a lot of people assume so. You would not be the first. In fact, I had friends coming up to me after the pod, because the podcast launched a month later in mid-July. And I had people coming up to me at church or wherever, and they would say, so how do you make money from a podcast? And I remember saying to my wife, why is that everybody's first question? What makes them think that's what I'm even trying to do? And she opened my eyes one day and said, well, the podcast in their mind came after your job loss, so everybody's just assuming that's what you're doing to make an income.
Right.
What people didn't know was several months before I lost my job is when I came up with the idea for the podcast, and I was planning and working on it. And actually, my first two interviews, I do an interview-driven podcast. The first two interviews were scheduled for the week that I got let go. In fact, the very first one was 2 days after I got let go. So all this was in the works anyway.
Yeah.
I was driving home one day from work last year, and in late March, and I was kind of counting up all the books I had read. I had set a goal for a book a month. And when I counted up the books I'd read in my mind, I was like at 10, and 11 and 12 had already started. I'd already started reading those. I did a lot of that via audio books, not all of it, but most of it. And when I realized I had read nearly a book a week, that's when sort of the idea began to fester for this podcast idea. I really enjoy reading business books. I have for about 10 or 15 years, and I get a lot out of that and love sharing what I'm learning with the staff that I was working with. We would sometimes go through them together. In fact, my leader years ago instilled that love of these kinds of books in me. And so that's kind of where it came from. And I decided that this was going to let me scratch a couple of itches. One was that I didn't think enough people were reading enough, and maybe I could encourage them to do it more, and scratching the itch of being able to, again, share what I'm learning as I'm learning it right along with the listener. And so that's kind of where it came from. And I started planning it and getting the equipment together and all the things necessary to launch a podcast. And like I said, was ready to go with the first interview mid-June, and I got let go. And I just thought, well, now it's just going to be easier to do interviews than it was before.
So, yeah, for sure.
And I have been doing it every Tuesday since mid-June. So
you're just doing a weekly podcast then at this point?
Yeah, yeah. And that's about all I can handle, I think. I said to somebody the other day, I'm not sure how I would have launched the crazy thing in mid-July had I not had that month off from work, mid-June right. and mid-July to do it, because it took so much of my time getting it off the ground and getting it ready and marketing it and logos and you know, priming the pump and all that stuff. Once I got it off the ground, it got a little easier. But preparing for an interview that I do is pretty intensive because unlike my friend John Lee Dumas, you know, he's in a situation where he can ask, and it works, he can ask every guest the same questions. So there isn't a ton of preparation that John has to do.
Right.
Which is great because he's doing them every day. If he had to do a lot of preparation, it would kill him. But mine is such that with every author that I chat with, I'm reading their latest book before I interview them because I'm going to interview them about their latest book. And so for me, prep, you know, if I was doing it more than weekly, it would just be impossible.
Right.
I couldn't read that many books. So I have an interview on Friday, the book of which I have not cracked open yet. So
right. That was going to be my next question.
Tonight and tomorrow are going to be spent reading, basically.
Wow. Yeah, that's definitely a commitment. I mean, even still, if you look at it that way, to think, you know, because I'm currently doing the weekly show, but in my mind, I'm trying to do some other things like these little products and things on the side. And then I've also got my girlfriend who wants to spend time with me and a full-time job. So it's like, all right, how do I, you know, keep everyone happy and then still maintain that flow and consistency, you know?
Yeah, what's paying the bills for me right now, and something I was dabbling in as far back as 2010, is mobile apps and websites for small businesses, many of which are here locally, but I have some clients in the East Coast and elsewhere. But in 2010, I launched a side business and had been working on that just kind of as work came in the margins of life. This time last year, business on the mobile app side started picking up a little bit. And so I began sort of following that snowball. And in the midst of following that, I decided I was going to do websites as well, just on a whim one day. Well, I'm gonna add that to my website. So I actually did more websites last year than I did mobile apps. And that's not in on a ton. I did like three mobile apps last year, and I did six websites, I think. And when this job loss came in June, I knew what I was going to do. I knew I was going to just pour into that 100%, and that was going to be my livelihood predominantly.
Right.
And then the podcast was just going to be a labor of love.
Yeah. Yeah. It makes sense with all the radio background and everything. Mm-hmm. And you definitely have the voice for it. I know, I didn't get to mention it yet, but thank you again for doing the intro for my show.
You know, it's funny you asked. I was just looking at the email exchange you and I had, and I'm like, do I still owe him those? Because I don't even remember doing them.
No, you did do them, but and I haven't sent you the final. I went to Fiverr, and I had a guy add sound, and he kind of made your voice more, I don't know, like I don't know the word to use. He kind of made it more like reverb, almost like a DJ or something.
Yeah, okay.
So it has a little bit of an effect to it.
Put some processing on it.
Yeah. I'll send it to you after the show and you can take a listen. I only did an intro. I didn't use the outro part you did for me. Haven't ordered it yet, but a lot better than the one I had. That's for sure.
Oh, good. Good.
But yeah, no, that's funny. And yeah, I appreciate that. Cause I mean, I know I was talking with, I interviewed, John Lee Dumas this past Saturday and he was telling me that you guys were doing the webinars together and everything. So,
yeah, we did one last Wednesday for Podcasters Paradise.
Yep.
And what we were doing in that webinar is I was leveraging it and the alignment with John to help add some credibility. John's a well-respected guy, as you know, to help add some credibility to my podcasting course, Podcaster Academy. What I was doing is encouraging people to sign up for Podcasters Paradise because it's a great community, and giving my course away at that time for free because you know how this works. I've got an affiliate relationship with John, and so as people are signing up through the webinar that I'm sending them to, then I get paid by John instead of by the student.
Right.
You know, so that enabled me the ability to be able to give my course away. And my course, I felt, was a good complement to John's Podcasters Paradise community because I'm teaching in my course communication skills and delivery, how to deliver your content, sound more natural and conversational, how to do solid interviews, that sort of thing. Things that I've learned from radio that guys like John and Cliff Ravenscraft and Daniel J. Lewis and others who do podcasting courses don't necessarily bring to the table because they don't have the radio background that I do. They bring a lot to the table. That's just something that makes what I'm doing unique. I really, really wanted to make sure that the podcast course I offered was indeed unique from those others because I didn't want to step on their toes, and doing what they're doing. And I felt like, again, I had something that I could bring to the table because of my background that those guys maybe didn't necessarily have. So.
Right. So now are you offering that as a bonus for people that just decide to sign up to Paradise through you, or is that for any member of Paradise?
It's a bonus for those who sign up through me. Okay. And the reason for that is, I'm charging, it's the inaugural class is going to start in February, in just a couple of weeks. And, down the road, I'm going to be charging about $497 for that course. I'm offering it right now for $297, for this first group of students, just to, as, an incentive, if you will, to be the first on board and get it cheaper than anybody's ever going to get it. So $297 is the price there. Well, John pays a 50% commission, and when he and I did the webinar, he was charging north of $600 for Podcasters Paradise. It's $1,000 actually, and people I brought to, and now it's $1,000, but people I brought to the webinar could get it for $597, which was 40% off. Well, my commission on that is about $295. So yeah, almost exactly what I'm charging for my course. So that's, you get everything John's community offers for less than what he was then selling it for, $400 less. And my being an affiliate allows me to give my course away then. So it was just for folks who signed up through my webinar. Now I'm still an affiliate, and so if somebody wants to sign up for Podcasters Paradise and get my course, they can still do that between now and February. But if you're already a member of Podcasters Paradise, then there's no way for me to get paid unless you purchase my course
right.
separately.
Okay, makes sense. Yeah, I joined at the early bird level of the Paradise, so I got in for only $200. But
there you go. Yeah.
Because I knew I had talked to John about his mastermind, and when he started talking about the Paradise, it sounded a little bit more of a fit for me. So
yeah, and it's a great community. It really is. And that's why, because I feel like what I'm doing is so different than that, that I felt like they were good compliments. And I just went to John with the idea, and he was very receptive to it. And so we worked it out. And my goal, honestly, was to get 5 new students out of it. I wasn't sure what kind of turnout we would have or what kind of turnout I would be able to push to the webinar. And knowing a lot of folks had already attended previous ones, in the communities that I was in. So I wanted 5. We ended up getting 6 new signups out of that. So I was very, very pleased with that. And I'm beginning communicating with those folks now about Podcaster Academy coming up in a couple of weeks. So
yeah, that's great. Now I know, I figured I'd ask while we were on subject, but were you bringing people to the webinar through Facebook ads just like John has been doing?
I did do some. Yeah. Yeah. I did, up through Wednesday of last week, did do some Facebook ads. I can't remember how much I spent, probably about $100 or something like that, all told. Yeah. Concurrently, I was running just Podcaster Academy ads independent of the webinar as well, and I'm still running those.
Oh, okay.
So I can't remember how much I spent on each one, but I did do some. I'm glad I did, because I think it was effective. I think it helped, and so... If I were doing another webinar, I definitely would do that again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. Now, in terms of I wanted to kind of dive back into podcasting in general, is there anything you've picked up, just from being, being part of the podcast community versus all your experience in radio? What are some things that, are really different about it?
Well, some of the things I didn't know coming in that I needed to learn were some of the things that Cliff and John and even Pat Flynn, who's done some free YouTube videos, share. And that's just sort of the technical side of tagging an MP3 and
right.
How to submit to the directories and none of those things I had any clue about when I started. I learned the importance of launching with multiple episodes on the first day. Pat talks about how he wished he had done that if he had it to do over. I don't necessarily agree with the philosophy of those who try to cram as much into those first 8 weeks that they possibly can, you know, the new and noteworthy
right.
Honeymoon. I think it's very important to establish a consistent schedule as quickly as possible. And I always felt, and you know, I don't want to step on anybody's toes. I don't know what your philosophy is on this or others that might be watching, but to me, flooding your feed with as many episodes as you can to sort of leverage the whole new and noteworthy honeymoon, to me is putting you ahead of your listeners, especially if ultimately your plan is to do an episode a week or whatever, like my plan right. was. So I did 4 episodes on day one, mainly because I wanted, when somebody found my podcast that first day or two, I wanted there actually to be something to subscribe to. And if there's just a single episode, well, but there's nothing to subscribe to. So also, I think multiple episodes shows that I'm serious. And so I did that on day one, and then I waited a week the following Tuesday and then released episode 4 and then a week in episode 5, et cetera. So ever since that first launch day where there were 4 episodes, there's been one a week every single Tuesday. And that has served me very well. I think, you know, while it is a time-shifted medium and people don't necessarily listen to it the moment you put it out there, and they're certainly not listening to it live, I still think that because people's lives are so full these days and they're being pulled in so many different directions, they want to know they can count on it at a certain time. And so I have a lot of people tell me, man, Tuesday, I know and I look forward to, you know, pulling up Stitcher or my podcast app, because I know Read to Lead podcast is going to be there every Tuesday morning. And so, you know, that's important to me to be consistent. Going back to my early days in radio, it wasn't unusual to run a promotion where you said something along the lines of, you know, be listening between 8 a.m. and 4 p.m. tomorrow for this sound or this song or whatever. And people would listen all day long waiting for that moment you were going to do that thing. People won't do that anymore. That doesn't work. And so in the last few years I was in radio, it was about setting an appointment. And it was, if you wanted to win tickets to such and such, then listen around 7:40 tomorrow morning for your chance to win. You had to set an appointment with people.
I think
a lot of podcasters, those who don't release their episodes consistently, if it's a weekly one, you know, the same day each week, I think aren't as successful as they could otherwise be if they did it consistently every Tuesday or every whatever. You know, if it's every day, then it's every day. But if it's weekly, even if it's just twice a month, be consistent on what days. You know, if it's every other Tuesday, then stay with every other Tuesday as best you can. Now, there's going to be things that get in the way. Life gets in the way, and we'll throw a wrench in all that. But I think the worst thing you can do is be inconsistent with your content release schedule, at least when it comes to podcasts. I think podcasts are a little different in that regard than blog posts, for sure.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. And it's funny because I went to a, you know, who to think, I went to a family party recently, and there was a guy there. I never met him. It was like a boyfriend of a distant cousin. And he happened to listen to a lot of podcasts. You know, he's not into marketing stuff. He was into football and things. But I told him I was a podcast host, and we talked a lot. And he was telling me that his big thing was, if you look at a podcast, it's like a TV show. You know, people are anticipating. You know, my girlfriend's downstairs saying, "Oh, The Walking Dead is in a week and a half." You know, like people are watching for these things. You know, it's the same idea with the podcast. So if you have that consistency, just like TV show, then people are going to be there to, you know, expect it, you know?
Yeah, people DVR stuff all the time, but they still need to know when it's going to be released to know when to DVR it. And they're still anticipating, even if they know, like you said, if they know you're not going to watch it live, then you'd still take the comfort in knowing that, well, Monday night when you are going to watch it, your DVR has recorded it and it's there instantly for you, and you're not having to go, "Well, where is it? He said it was going to be Sunday night. Why is it not here?"
You know? Yeah.
If you're not doing that consistently, you're just frustrating people, and that's the worst thing you can do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, I think these are all really great great tips. You know, and I've fluctuated because I bought a home in June, my first home, and I kind of like fell off the bandwagon for a month or two, and I jumped back in. And then when I don't know if you've used it might not quite fit your niche. I mean, potentially with books, I mean, sure, you might be able to use it, but the Harrow platform, Help a Reporter?
I have used that occasionally. Not recently, but yeah, I'm familiar with it.
I am. The first or only inquiry I did on that, I got over 50, 60 emails. It was pretty overwhelming.
Okay. For guests, you mean?
Yeah, to get guests. And
okay.
I mean, the philosophy I've kind of gone with and with this show is I've just been interviewing anybody that's had success and that has something really they could share to help people.
Yeah.
That's what it was all about for me. So I wanted to get everyone on that sounded at least like they would be a good guest. So I kind of went on this spree a month or so ago and I just went crazy for a week and interviewed so many people that my head was spinning.
Well, I'll tell you a little bit of a secret. I haven't decided ultimately what I'm going to do with this yet, but so I may sound like I'm contradicting the advice that I just gave, but in looking at my course in February, and I'm still putting the final pieces of that together, I'm actually considering taking a sabbatical from my podcast for a month. So that I can give my full attention to my students and the course. I am going to be doing some one-on-one training. I've got nearly 20 students signed up right now. The one-on-one training is going to be weekly, one-on-one talent coaching, if you will. And I'm looking at that, and I'm getting a little overwhelmed thinking about doing all that and hosting a weekly podcast at the same time for another, a book I've got to read, an author I need to interview. The production that goes into that, and then doing this course, it's making me a little bit nervous. So I'm actually, for the first time, contemplating on Tuesday's show, my last January show is coming up on Tuesday, in my open and close, letting my listeners know, hey, I'm going to take a month off in February, come back in March. There's a part of me that, 6 months ago would have never considered that, or 5 months ago, or 3 months ago, as even an option. I didn't even give myself Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve off. I had episodes those days as well. Tuesday happened to follow Christmas Eve or fall on a Christmas Eve and fall on New Year's Eve this past year. So, that would have been a perfect excuse to take a couple weeks off. And even then I didn't do it. But it's sort of a bandwidth thing for me right now, trying to figure out how I'm going to get all this done. But there's a part of me that worries about, even if I telegraph it, even if I'm upfront and not just missing weeks, but letting listeners know, it'd be different if I was going along and not telling anybody on my podcast that I'm not going to be here next week. I think if you do that and you telegraph it and you let people know in advance, they're going to forgive that, for lack of a better way of saying it. But if you just, 1 week you're there, 1 week you're not, or 1 week you're there on a Wednesday, the next week you're there on a Thursday, and you're not telegraphing that, that gets really frustrating. But still, having said all that, I'm a little nervous about the idea of being gone for a month. Will people go off and find something else to do and my podcast comes back in March and not return?
Yeah. I'm not sure. I figure, if you tell people, I don't think, it's not like the end of the world that, your show isn't there for a month. Yeah. But I mean, I don't know if it would be feasible. Another option might be to, if you were to crank away at some point, maybe try to do, read through 4 books and get 4 interviews done and then just auto schedule it. So people are still going to get the content, but you could then devote your time to something else.
Yeah. And, I don't know that I'm maybe past the point of no return on that one, but, I wish I would have realized sooner that I might have a potential bandwidth issue in February. And I would have done exactly what you just described. And it turns out for the last 2 or 3 months, I've been sort of very fortunate to, most of my interviews are ending up being done just days before I publish that episode. And so, which is, a little risky, as if you want to be out there and be consistent. But, my interview for Tuesday's episode, this coming Tuesday, the 28th of January, won't be recorded until tomorrow. And, last Tuesday's episode was recorded just last Friday. And so I've been on that track. I started out about 7 or 8 episodes in the can, but inevitably, things catch up with you unless you're 40 or 50 interviews out when you start.
Right.
Really 6 or 7 or maybe 8 interviews in the can when I started, but eventually that caught up with me. And I got lazy a little bit in November too. And so I actually, the holidays I worked you know, a little bit ahead with December, but then I did best of episodes in Christmas Eve and New Year's Eve. And now back in January, I'm just each week I'm setting that interview for the next episode. And so all that to say, I'm kind of been long winded about it, but I haven't been working ahead like I would like to, just from a bandwidth issue. And had I realized that February was going to be kind of as tough as it seems like it's going to be to get all this done, I would have banked a few, and I just haven't been good about doing that. So if there's anything I'm not good at or consistent with, it's being 4, 5, 6 weeks ahead on my episodes.
Yeah, I mean, that I've kind of been doing things in spurts. Like I had I'm doing this interview with you now, and an hour and a half ago interviewed Corbett Barr of, you know, he's big for his Fizzle course and Think Traffic. And then Saturday I did an interview with John, but I still have, I think I have another episode I'm posting. So, I mean, I might not have this live until like mid to late February because I want to keep it doing a week, and then I can spend my other time, you know, dealing with, you know, hanging out with my girlfriend, and then maybe spending time with some of these projects and things. So I can still, like, I'm going through a course right now on how to launch products and things like that. And it's super dedicated. Like it's enough of a drain that I literally could only do that and still feel overwhelmed with everything else.
Right.
So I've been like, you know, it's a 6 week thing, and I've had it for like 2 or 3 months now, because I'm just doing everything slowly, but trying to crank on the extra little things on the side. So that's why I've sort of kept my interviews to 1 week, and then I can focus on the other stuff and try to monetize things and bring in a little extra side income.
I've had two requests this last week for websites from two different companies, and I've told both of them in my proposals to them that it would be March or maybe April before I could start their website. Mainly because I'm trying to avoid February. I'm trying to you know, keep that month, you know, dedicated to the course and the students, and maybe a podcast episode or two. We'll just have to wait and see.
I have a niche side project with my girlfriend where we monetized a site with a bunch of clothing. She loves skulls, so we have a site called Skull Clothing, and it's not bad. It's getting 100 visitors a day, and I had a guy, he found that I was using a particular plugin that's doing really well. It's selling like crazy over on the internet marketing forums.
Okay.
And that's what I'm using. So someone reached out to me and they said, can you build me the exact same site for my niche? And I offered to do it for $200. It's probably pretty cheap, but it's so easy for me to set it up. I said, why not?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Anything to, you know, and then it's good experience. I love building out websites from scratch. It's kind of fun, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoy the process. What I don't enjoy, and I'm ashamed to say this, but what I don't enjoy is the communication back and forth with the client.
Yeah, and that's kind of like this guy, he sent me the hosting info for one, and he's got like his domain on GoDaddy, and he's got HostGator for the host, and it's just, you know, I'm trying to have him switch the name servers now. They're not set up right, so I'm looking at some old domain he bought, and I can't log in or do anything. So I'm basically waiting a week for this guy to like do these little minor changes just so I can get started. It's definitely frustrating.
Yeah, been there, done that for sure. I like the clients who you know, get out of the way and let you build the site, and then you present it to them and they're like, looks good to me. Versus the ones that are like trying to be a part of every little nuance and every decision. And I get that. I mean, you're paying for a website. You want it, you know, you want it looking the way you want it to look. But I've been fortunate to have a number of clients this past year who just say, hey, build me a website. I trust you. You're the expert. Go do what you do, and be more than happy with the end result. And then on the flip side, I've had those that are like making every decision and having this tons and tons of input into every little nuance. And we get the thing done, and it'll be a site that I just think looks awful because the client has had so much say in it.
It's crazy because I found I bought a product from a guy back in September, right? And I loved the product, and the back end of it was just, wasn't that great. Like he built it with like Yahoo Site Builder, and he didn't know WordPress. So I said, you know what? I can help you recreate this thing. And we talked quite a bit. We talked hours and hours over Skype, and I helped him redo this whole membership page, And we've been working on this for some time now. We recently launched it, but when it was like almost ready to be done, like I was like, oh, everything's good. And he went through and he's like, oh, we got to add this and you missed this and we got to change all the text. And he like just really finicky about all these little things. And a lot of it was fine, but it definitely is tough because without going through, like I wish I had gone through the process and kind of showed him more along the way. Because otherwise there would have been a lot less, you know, I spent time doing these weird things. Like he wanted to use a special font. So I had to find a plugin to make the titles and things show with a special font. It was just a whole, like, you know, these things that drain so much time.
Yeah. And I've got to keep those things to a minimum right now, just because I don't have the time to, you know, if you're the kind of client that will just let me do it and not be so particular. And I don't mean that to sound, you know, you know, like I'm all that in a bag of chips or anything, but I'm just, yeah. I just, you know, for a client that wants to be that particular about it, you need to have somebody else build your site. Cause again, the whole bandwidth issue for me is just, I don't have the time to put into that. So,
right now, I did want to ask you, I know we're kind of bouncing around a little bit, but, in terms of podcasting and just in terms of your course, like obviously you've gained some members into your mm-hmm. Podcasters Academy. Are you doing anything else with your podcast, like sponsorships or any other forms of monetization?
Yeah, I have had some success, some modest success with monetization. In fact, I got a nice little check in the mail yesterday for sponsorships I sold in November.
Wow.
Lesson learned, pay first, then you get your sponsorship versus the other way around. you'd think I'd know better, but oh well, live and learn. Yeah. I got paid. That's the main thing. But not a ton. I mean, I got a check today, you know, from Audible for December. You know, the whole affiliate, you know, thing with Audible that a lot of podcasters do, or not just Audible, but others as well. And that's just, you know, coffee money, really, the Audible stuff. But I did have some success in November, particularly with sponsorships. It's not been something that's been consistent. I am in talks with a potential sponsor. They haven't done anything yet. They're looking for a certain download per episode number that I haven't quite reached yet, but I'm real close. And so I think they're holding out for a little bit more growth. Though I had my best week since I launched 7 months ago last week. Which was great. I saw numbers for downloads for the week that I hadn't seen since the height of my new and noteworthy performance back in August or something. So that was great to see. That's what I'm working on. And then really when I launched the podcast, again, I was planning launching the podcast. I was gainfully employed and monetizing it wasn't something that I'd really thought about. But in the back of my mind, my desire was always to leverage the podcast as a springboard to do other things that I would get paid for that would, you know, be indirectly related to the podcast. One of those is Podcaster Academy. I didn't know 7 months ago that I would be teaching a podcasting course, but the only reason I'm able to launch that and do that and have any success with that is because of Read to Lead podcast. Right. If not for that podcast, if not for entering into the foray myself, nobody would take me seriously. And so that podcast has served as my springboard to be able to do this course. Now, I also understand that, you know, when I'm pimping that course on my own podcast, maybe 3-5% of my Read to Lead podcast listeners might be interested in doing a podcast themselves. So I've not even begun to engage my entire audience when it comes to selling a product. There's a small percentage that might be interested in launching a podcast. So, you know, down the road, I have plans for, much like you were saying a moment ago, I've got plans for other products that are geared specifically to the other 95% of my listeners, products in and around things having to do with reading or, things along those lines. And so none of those have been completed yet, but I'm very excited about, you know, monetarily speaking, what opportunities that may hold, because I'm having, you know, really decent success with the academy. You know, I'm almost at 20 students, and that's where I want to be each month that I do this. My plan is to do it every other month, probably, like February, April, June, August, October kind of a thing. But what if, you know, I develop a more listener focused product down the road and, you know, 10% convert, you know,
right, or whatever, the more of an audience for that on your show.
Yeah. And I might be selling a much, much cheaper product. Who knows? I'm not sure, but, I'm likely to get a lot more engagement if the product is geared to 95% of the audience, whereas the thing that I'm pimping right now on my podcast, maybe 3, 4, 5% even care about. So,
right.
So monetization, some modest success there, but really for me, it's about how can I leverage the podcast as a springboard to do other stuff. And I enjoy coaching, and so I had a coaching session today with a couple of students related to Podcaster Academy, and doing, you know, conversations like this one, and just talking about philosophy, how they can make their, most of them have existing podcasts, and what they can do to make them better, things that they can tweak, techniques they can use that I've learned as a broadcaster to sound, again, more natural, conversational, those kind of things. And so I really just enjoy that process. And so that's that kind of thing sort of gets my juices flowing.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I mean, I noticed that it seemed like I forget how many you have, but when I looked at the ratings and everything on your show, it looked like you were really taking off.
On the Read to Lead podcast?
Yeah, in terms of like the audience, like people were being very receptive, and I didn't get a chance to listen to an entire episode of yours. I'll probably go back and lately, because my commute is now, since I moved, my commute's only like 3 miles. I don't even listen to music in the car. Crazy, you know, I listen to maybe a little bit of radio, and that's it. And I used to listen to Pat Flynn. You know, I listened to Pat Flynn for like 8 weeks straight and got through about 70 episodes. But I don't have the time. I don't do it anymore now because I'm not in the car as much as I was doing 30-mile-a-day commutes or whatever it was.
Yeah, you know, I know the feeling because I'm not, you know, working from home now. I'm not commuting at all, and I don't listen to nearly as many podcasts. And
yeah, and that's, you know, it's not like I'm at home and I'm just at the computer. I don't really have the same tune to just sit and listen. I mean, I've had a couple opportunities, maybe if I'm in someone else's car or something, like I'm off with the family and they want to go to some Christmas thing, I could sit and listen to a half an episode or something, but really, you know, it's actually a little upsetting. Like because I want to get into more now that I'm meeting all these people and interviewing people that have their own shows. You know, I want to listen to more.
You know, speaking of which, I read an article on Dig a couple of days ago, and then I heard the guys on the Beancast. I don't know if you've ever heard that podcast.
I think so. Yeah.
They were talking about this article today, but it originated, I believe, on Dig, called Is This Thing On? And it talks about audio specifically as a medium and why it never seems to go viral. It's always a blog post or a video that's going viral. But how can audio go viral, or more importantly, can it go viral? I thought it was a very interesting article. It's from January 15th, but the URL, in case you want to read it, is dig.com/originals/why audio never goes viral.
Yeah, send me the link after and I'll include it in the show notes and people can check it out.
Sure, will do. Will do. But very interesting article in light of what you were saying.
Yeah, I know. And it's kind of true now that you actually mentioned it. I never really see anything going, you know, obviously, like if you look at an episode on a popular blog, like if I go over to Pat Flynn's blog, I know that he's had, you know, his interview with Tim Ferriss is, you know, going to have lots of engagement, but that's just his audience. It's not like something that went crazy like the Harlem Shake or something like that.
Right.
I was watching one of those videos earlier. That's why I thought of that.
You know, it's really tough to scan audio. I mean, you can glance at a video and quickly find, you know, the portion you want to watch, or a blog post you can scan visually. You can't really do that with audio. SoundCloud is trying to change that with what they're doing. I'm not sure that's all they're going to be successful, but it's difficult to sort of or consume audio a la carte the way you can consume video and blog posts sort of a la carte and get just the little pieces you want and move on.
Yeah.
On the flip side of that, you know, audio is such that we often consume it while it's in the background. You can't do that with a video. You can't do that with a blog post. We don't watch video in the car. We don't read blog posts in the car. But the car has become that haven for audio. Radio relegated itself to audio years ago when TV took a foothold. And I don't know anybody who listens to radio at home. Anybody who I know listens to radio listens in the car, and that's about the only place they listen to it. But I'm really excited for podcasting in particular when apps like and companies like Stitcher are, you know, making deals with automobile manufacturers, you know, people making new cars to get prominent placement in that digital dashboard.
I think I read that, yeah.
And that's to me really exciting because now there's the opportunity for, you know, little old me and my podcast to be so much more easily accessed and even, you know, served on a silver platter to somebody who might not ever go searching for it on their phone or in iTunes. There's the opportunity now for them to just stumble across it on their way to work that never existed before. And so that to me is really exciting to see where that's going to go with folks like Stitcher and others who are making those inroads with manufacturers and into the dashboard.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think that's cool that it's definitely all going to expand and people keep talking, you know, podcasting's kind of a future thing. Like people are really jumping on board and it's becoming much more popular as a medium for getting yourself out there. And, you know, even talking with Corbett Barr earlier today, he, you know, they're doing really well. Him and a couple other guys, you know, a couple entrepreneurs that he works with for his blog that, you know, they do a show together and they just chat amongst themselves and they've had a great launch too. I think they're almost over 200 reviews. You know, it's just another way that they're getting exposure to their brand and their business. It's just really cool how everyone's kind of flocking to this whole podcasting thing, you know?
Yeah. When I think when I had John Lee Dumas on my podcast back in July, I guess it was late July, I'm sure this figure has gone up since then, but one figure I remember that he cited was, you know, 45 million people a month are in iTunes looking for content to consume, looking for a podcast to consume. You know, why wouldn't you want to be and take advantage of it and be in front of that audience?
And when
there's, I think the figure still holds, when there's 900 blogs for every one podcast, you know, that tells me that podcasting has room for all kinds of growth. And if you want to really have a chance to, I mean, I've launched blogs and in the last seven, eight years and have never made any sort of, you know, measurable impact with my writing. But my podcast has done more in 6-7 months than all the blogs I've ever started combined.
Yeah.
With not a whole lot more effort, in part because 900 blogs for every one podcast, there's less competition right now.
Yeah. I mean, I knew when I started this, it was more of, I guess more of a focus thing for me is finding something I could get interested in and stick with. And I like the idea of, it's always been a weird thing with me. Like if I'm in the hallway and the CEO of a company I work for comes walking through, like I always just have this knack where I just like feel like I want to pick their brain.
Right.
I don't know what it is, but I've always had that, like, you know, like I want to strike up conversation and feel like I could talk and like get something out of them or learn something or whatever the case. So this has kind of been like a perfect thing for me. Like, you know, I haven't really felt like, you know, even though my show, I didn't get it in New and Noteworthy. I think I have a couple reasons why. I think part of it, I think, might have been my intro. So I didn't really have the best start and my audience is still pretty low. It's not anything, you know, I know for a fact you and some of these other guys I interview are doing a lot better than I am with my show, but I still like really enjoy it. And I was able to, you know, I have found, I write for a magazine now and I got hired to do that because I was doing the interview show. So it you know, it's not like I'm failing by any means.
Yeah. And that's like, it goes back to what I was saying before, right? You've leveraged your podcast to do other things. One of my students I was coaching this morning, though they're not monetizing their podcast directly, their podcasts, I say they, it's he and his wife, that they're doing was directly responsible for them getting a couple of other gigs related to podcasting that that's, I mean, they're living very comfortably right now because of the audio production work primarily that they're able to do that they would not have been in line for or been considered for were they not doing a podcast. And so I think it's really important to look at what things could your blog or podcast or whatever that foundation is that you're creating content or whether that vacuum you're creating content in, how can it be leveraged as a springboard for doing other things? And those things could be many, many, many things. It's not just, will somebody advertise on my podcast? It's what can this be a launching pad for me for? Maybe it's speaking or at conferences or something, you know, a lot of things. So,
yeah, I know. I don't know if you've met up with Brian Kelly. He does podcasts on all public speaking. So that's an interesting niche. And I had him on the show as well.
Yeah, I've listened to his a couple of times. I don't know him personally, but yeah, I know who you're talking about. What is it? The name of it?
What the Speak is what it is.
That's it. Yeah. Yeah.
But
I remember when he did a guest post on Michael Hyatt's blog a while back. Was interviewing. I noticed people like Michael and others on his blog. And this was like long before his podcast came out. And so I guess when he did that on his blog, he was just kind of banking those with the intention of re-releasing them as a podcast down the road. Because he's taken interviews I've already seen on his blog months ago, and creating a podcast, a video podcast out of those. And so,
yeah, that's exactly what he did. I talked to him about it, and that's exactly what he did.
Okay, cool. Very smart on his part.
Yeah, it looks like he's off to a great start, and he's in a kind of a unique niche. I feel like, you know, there's not a lot of people tackling the public speaking niche.
Yeah. There are a couple I think of that probably should have that may miss their opportunity if they're not careful.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of these guys out there. You know, if you look at, I think I read a blog post Pat Flynn did where he talked all about his public speaking that he does over the preparation that's put into it. And I'm sure that's something he could easily get into if he wanted to, you know?
Yeah, he could. He's a guy who somehow gets a whole lot more done than I would think possible by one person.
Yeah, I think a lot of people think the same thing. I know he even cut ties with some of his VAs, I remember at one point, and I don't know if he's got as many people helping him in terms of like the virtual assistants and things like that as he once did. So it's crazy what he's got the family too, so I don't know how he does it either. But
so you're saying he's doing more of it himself now since he cut ties with
I think so, yeah, because I don't think he needed, I think he had them doing a task, at least at one point. I mean, this was months back. I remember hearing him say he let go of a guy and, you know, he felt bad, but, you know, the guy did great work. He just didn't need him anymore for a particular what he had, you know, what he was using the guy for.
Right.
I know he did admit as well to talking about he's got a whole site he calls the Niche Site Duel, and he admitted to not participating in that forum as much and helping the community because he's doing too many things at once. He can't be there for everybody and all his projects.
Yeah, that's tough. That's tough.
But yeah, I mean, I know we've gone almost an hour here. I figured we could probably wrap things up. It's pretty late here. So
okay.
But yeah, I really appreciate you coming on and you know, talking about your show. I think this is great. You know, if you don't mind, I'll throw this in. You know, as most people probably by now, the time I'll have this out there, I have a Udemy course. If you're okay with it, I'll throw this interview in there for free, you know, just to give you some exposure.
Okay.
And I appreciate you doing the intros for me as well. That's great help.
Well, don't forget readtoleadpodcast.com and podcasteracademy.com.
Yep. Yeah, I'll put links in the show notes. And don't forget to send me the link for the other. What was the link on Dig? Well, people can check that out as well.
Awesome.
Yep. Talk to you later.